This episode of The Gauge is brought to you by Power Pro CBD. Guys, this is the best CBD product on the market, period. They're the only CBD company that controls its crops from start to finish. You know, as they say, from dirt to bottle. It's the most pure CBD supplement on the market. There's so many CBD products out there, and most of them are BS. I can tell you most of them are BS. This is not that. This is the only FDA-approved manufacturer of CBD out there. CBD itself, not FDA approved, but this manufacturer is approved by the FDA. Don't buy your CBD at a gas station, guys. This company, third-party tests their product. It's the most pure supplement out there. CBD has so many health benefits, guys. I can tell you from personally using it. Here's what's really nice. It tastes really good. I'm over here squirting CBD in my mouth. I look ridiculous, but it tastes great. Guys, they're offering a great promo here. 15% off and free shipping. Yes, and free shipping. Type in the promo. The Gauge at checkout to get that discount. It's powerprocbd.com. That's powerprocbd.com. Check them out.
This is The Gauge with host Chance Conradude.
Are you freaking serious? It's Conrado. This is The Gauge, and I am Chance Conrado. On this episode of the podcast, we have got Carrie Swearingen. Carrie is the mother of Daylen Swearingen, the NFR qualifier and PBR bull rider. She's got a really, really interesting story. She's been through some very traumatic things in her life and come out the other side shining, and it's pretty emotional, and she came all the way from New York to tell this story. I encourage everybody to listen to this one. I got a lot out of it, and I think you guys will too. Check it out. Do me a kindness and let everybody know out there listening who you are and kind of what ties you to rodeo and what have you.
My name is Carrie Swearingen, and I have two boys who have saved me many, many times in my life. One is Daylen, and the other is Colton. Daylen rides in the PBR, made it to the NFR, had a great 2019. And Colton is a calf roper and steer wrestler, and he's making his way there, and that's a good thing.
It's a great thing. Yeah, it's a hard thing right now.
Yes,
that you know, it is. This year, but in general, yeah. I mean, that's the thing that's near and dear to all of our hearts. That's the reason we do this show. That's, you know.
Colton's been looking for somewhere to go. Where can I go rope? Where can I go? So he goes anywhere he can now.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. And this is a little different episode from what we normally would do on this show, but you have a ultra unique story that I have never heard, and so I'm kind of on the edge of my cowhide covered seat looking forward to hearing what you have to say. I'm actually a little nervous to hear it because I tend to be a little emotional, and I have a feeling this might do that to me. But give us just a little, because like I said, it's the first time I'm meeting you, a little background on yourself.
I was raised in New York, and I moved to North Carolina. I lived down there for 11 years, and when I was there, I had married a guy from down there. He was a cowboy. He was a bull rider, and it wasn't good from day one, but I was going to save him. I was going to give him everything he needed. I was going to make sure there was supper on the table, and the house was clean, and everything was perfect, and it just did not work out. In any way, shape, or form. He had drug and alcohol issues, and he did that often, but I was going to still fix him, and I am not God. But God is awesome, because I was at work one day, and I had Daylen and Colton were 3 and 4 at the time, and he came into my work. My mom and dad had come down into town because they lived in New York, and they came to North Carolina, and they were just going to help me with the trial. We were going to go to court the following day. And I went to work, and my boss came in, and she said, someone's been calling, and they've been hanging up, Karen. I think it might be him, and I'm just telling you. And I said, that's all right. We go to court tomorrow. We can figure it all out, figure out who gets the kids and everything. Because I wanted to be able to give my kids everything. The year before that, my youngest, he called me a bitch when I went to change his diaper. And they shouldn't have heard that word for him to come so easily.
How old was he?
He was 2.
So very impressionable.
Yep. And he had heard it many times. So So I had made plans to leave, and I had actually left. I had actually left the year before, and I left, and he beat me up really, really good, a whole lot. And I moved in with my. I stayed at my sister's for a week, for 2 weeks, and then we had him removed from the house, and got that all taken care of. And I had been talking to a safe house, a place that would protect women who are in vulnerable situations. And so, you know, after that all happened, there was maybe 2 or 3 or 4 months that went by, and he called. He would call every now and again. And, you know, he just would say the right words, and I would believe them because, you know, I wanted it to work. So, so I wanted it to work. And so he did come back home, and I went back to work. I was working anyway, but I was back to work, and I came home to see him. I came home one day, and he was on the couch again, which is what he normally would do. He would drink late at night and get high and then sit on the couch and make a fuss if anybody made any noise. And I've got 2 boys that are full of life and love and energetic. So when I came back and saw him there, I had decided that I can't do this anymore. It's going to continue, and my kids will continue to be that same way because it's a vicious cycle. Domestic abuse is a vicious cycle. What you see and learn is what you will do. And I've got 2 boys that I want to be good boys when they grow up. I want them to treat their women with respect. And so I had made plans to leave, but and the counselor that was talking to me from the safe house, she said it will be much worse than it was the first time. Well, when I left him the first time, he beat me up. He pulled my sweater up over my head, trying to choke me out. And he took me, he would grab my ponytail and just hit me on my head or on places that people wouldn't normally see.
So he was being strategic about what he was doing, very conscious about it, very strategic. And so one thing I wanted, when was this? Well, I mean, what year? You don't have to tell me how long, but like when was this?
That was in like 2002.
Okay, so it's been quite some time.
Mm-hmm. And then in 2000, it was March 23rd of 2004. So that was in 2003. So in 2004, March 23rd, I went to work. My boss, she came out, she said, somebody's been calling and hanging up. And I'm like, well, we'll go and get it taken care of tomorrow. And so I thought I was in the back of the office, but I worked for a staffing service, and I was right in the front desk. And he came walking in the door, and he had a rifle. And apparently he just kept saying, is this what you want? This is what you want. And I am just in my mind thinking, who is going to take care of my kids? Who is going to, you're going to kill me, and then you're going to go to jail, and who will raise my kids? That was what was running through my head. So he started shooting. There was a gentleman that sat behind me. He got up and went out the back door. There was a back door. And about right above where his head would be, there was a bullet hole. So you know he was shooting him. And then my manager was in her office, and she came out and she started talking to him. And he took his eyes off of me and looked at her, and I pushed him out of the way and went back there. And then she said that I grabbed the back of my head, and then I fell down. He had shot me. He had grazed the back of my head. I don't have any hair on the back of my head, about, you know, 2 or 3 inches there. And then there's a divot in the side of my head right here where a bullet went in, and it's still in my head. I have 33 pieces of a bullet still in my head. But
so he had fired 2 shots that both hit you?
No, he fired 9 shots. And in the wall, it went through the wall into the other office, so the girl in the other office was down on the ground. It was like a strip mall that we were in. So by the time that my manager ended up calling 911, they had been called 3 or 4 times already. And there was a gentleman that was coming in to get some information about a job, and he sat in his car and watched it. So, you know, he had planned to do it. He went and bought the gun that day, because when I had left him the year before, they took all of his guns away. And so he went and bought one that day and came in to shoot me, to kill me. But I serve an awesome God. And he took the bullet. God did. And if you think, people will say, well, how do you know? Well, sometimes you just have to get shot in the head to see things. And that is what happened to me. There was a couple of neighbors that were a couple doors down from my office, And they came in and they stopped the bleeding, or they tried to stop the bleeding, so to speak. And my coworker that ran out the back door, he went up and called. And the ambulance got there within 2 minutes of when I was shot. And I made it to the hospital. And there was a gentleman, there was somebody there to have another neurosurgery that day. And they took me instead. So the neurosurgeon, it was a big trauma hospital in Asheville. And the neurosurgeon was there to operate on somebody else. And they took me instead. So I didn't have to wait for him to come in and do all that. Everything, my parents didn't get to the hospital before I went into surgery, which probably saved my life. But God had it all planned out. He had everybody where they needed to be. And then, so, you know, I was in surgery and then I came out. My brother is a doctor and he was in Oklahoma and he flew out to see everything. So he kind of, you know, I don't know if it helps to have somebody like that, but the doctors and the nurses kind of, you know, paid attention and did what they should do, which, you know, God had all that already in control. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, Jesus, of course. How could you not? How could you not say those things and be like, well, yeah, there's a God, especially in a time like we're in right now where that's not at this very moment, but in general, the number one thing that's attacked is God and people's faith. I mean, for God's sakes, Jesus is being called racist right now, which is just an insane thing to think.
Yes, I agree.
To hear somebody kind of do the Cliff Notes version of what happened to you that quick and all that, it's a lot to process when you're sitting in front of somebody who went through that. It's just amazing to hear, and to hear you speak so eloquently, knowing that you got shot in the head and have a bullet in your head. I mean, that's truly amazing. It's amazing.
When I went back to the doctor about a month later, maybe couple weeks later, I went back to the doctor and he saw me and he said, you look so much prettier than you did when I saw you the first time. He said, you have, I did leave 33 bullets in your head. And I looked at him and he said, well, we learned through the Vietnam War that if you leave them in there, if we were to take them out, it would re-damage what was already done. Mm-hmm. So we took them out and, you know, you look at war and you say it's bad, but we learned good things there.
Right. So I kind of want to circle back a little bit, and I don't mean to keep on prodding, but I'm so curious.
No, you should, because
yeah. Well, and so I'm just wondering, it's like when you met unnamed person, he was rodeoing, bull riding, had that typical, I mean, it's just interesting because you hear about so many women who get stuck in this cycle, the same cycle you got stuck in, and some of them get out, some of them don't. Very few make it to a point where you do, where your life was literally attempted to be taken from you. I mean, I didn't say that quite well, but your life was, someone tried to kill you. And that's, very few people can even imagine what that feels like. Like, someone wants to kill me. And so you had met him. So he would leave to go rodeo.
Yep.
Like a lot of people that we know do. It's a very common thing. They leave, they rodeo, they come back to their family. That was what was going on.
But at this time, he wasn't rodeoing anymore. He had quit that. He was working for his dad, but he worked out of town. He worked out of town like Monday through Thursday. He'd come back to town Thursday or Friday, mm-hmm. drink and party and do stuff with his friends. And he'd come back Friday night and he was drunk and high. And you know, you've got two kids and kids are loud and they have fun and they're rowdy and you weren't allowed to be that way. So whenever he was there, me and the boys would leave and go do something.
So there was zero family.
Yeah.
There.
It was not good. They were scared of him. They would, you know, we would sit and have, I would make dinners and we would sit and have dinners and, you know, Dalen would get up and leave. He wouldn't even sit at the table. And he's like a 2-3-4-year-old, and it would be that way because he would be drunk, you know, or high or whatever. And, you know, and I'm trying to get control of the kids and I'm like, this is not right.
Kids can't live. Have a 5-year-old son and a 1-year-old son, and I couldn't imagine my children at the age that they are actually comprehending what it is to be truly afraid of someone, because they're not inherently.
No.
Children are not.
And there were only a couple of times that I left them alone with him. And during those times, it shouldn't have been. The things that my kids would tell me, you know, they would say, well, he wouldn't let me in. He went outside and he told us we couldn't come out there. What he was doing out there was with his friends And, you know, things like that, you know, the kids just don't need to see it. You mm-hmm. know, this world will tear you down any chance it can. So, and I still today boost my kids up because this world will tear you down. But, yeah, it's just not good.
Was there a point in time, and you had said you had left him the first time, and when you decided, because, I mean, just so many people have been in your shoes, because it's just a scary thing that happens in our society, in every society, but what was it? Was it the idea of having a family unit, or was it truly just to try to pull him out of his own way, do you think?
Well, I wasn't going to get a divorce.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Any time that the doors of our church were open, I was there. And maybe I was there for me. It gave me a peace when I went there. I could relax. My kids enjoyed it. They learned a lot there. So maybe that, you know, so I wasn't going to get a divorce, but I would pray for him all the time. He was at the top of my list every time, praying for him. And it kept coming back, and just more and more, the things were not positive in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, I have had so many girls say, I was doing the same thing that you did, and thank you for sharing your story, because, you know, and you hear of people, and they're like, well, yeah, he was bad, but now he's good. And I'm thinking, really? Because we can't change anybody. You know, we might try to, and that's what I have always, you know, I was trying to change him, but he was what he was. But his dad had domestic abuse issues as well. And his mom had worked for a domestic abuse shelter, something like that. So, you know, he had heard about it. And I was debating, should I do it or not? And I had called a paralegal from the attorney that I hired. And I said, you know, I just don't know if I should do it. What should I do or not? And she said, okay, well, what will your kids be like in 5 years? I said, okay, because they would have been just like that. They would have learned stuff that...
Yeah, the cycle continues unless it's broken. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's been proven time and time again. So were you, I mean, this is probably a question you've got a lot, but were you completely dumbfounded and shocked that he showed up that day with that rifle to cause the chaos that he chose to cause? Or were you like, this makes sense? I knew it was coming, just didn't know it was today.
I don't know. I don't know. Who would think that that would happen? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But yet, those that know him probably knew that it was coming. You know? I guess. I don't know. That's a rough one. You know? Because you'd like to say, well, no, he would never do that. You know? But anyway, you know.
You learn that people are capable of pretty unspeakable things.
Yeah, they are.
So you may not, I mean, somebody would have told you this, but you wouldn't have known at the time. I mean, the cop showed up. Did he make an attempt to flee?
Actually, he wasn't there when they got there. He had left. He had gotten in his truck and he had left. I think he had gotten on a major interstate right there in Asheville and they didn't know where he was. So the cops actually went to where our house was. My sister was there. My mom and dad were there. And my two boys were there, and they came up and they knew. It was like they knew.
They knew what had happened before it happened.
Exactly. So my mom and dad came to the hospital, and they told my sister to take the two boys to a friend's house or somebody because they're going to, we were kind of up in a woods in the mountains of North Carolina. So they were going to check everything out at the house and in the woods and everything. So she got him in the truck and was taking him over there. And she said to me, she said, you know what, Carrie, Dalen grabbed Colton's hand and said, we have to pray for mom. And if you have the faith of a child, we could do, that's what takes us down. If we don't believe in it, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you have to believe what is unbelievable, so to speak. And so they ended up going to some friends of ours house and stayed there. You know, and previously when I had left him the first time, he had told me that he was going to take my horse and shoot it. And the kids had heard that. And they were like, he's going to take your horse. He's going to take Barbie and shoot her. What are we going to, you know, they were worried about the horse. They were worried about things. You know, they're 3 and 4, 2 and 3. You know, they shouldn't be worrying about silly stuff like that, you know?
They shouldn't even know things like that exist.
No,
at that age.
They should not. And, you know, I've given my testimony at a lot of youth groups and stuff like that, and there's a handful of kids that stay afterward, and they're like, if you don't know what it's like, and they're adults or going to be adults soon, and the stuff that they're in, it just, what we have allowed in our homes, it's, you know, it's just not right.
There's just no way to maybe know until you come out of it with a clear head or a head full of shrapnel like you to really know what was going on when it was going on, maybe. And
you're right.
I have to just assume you felt so hopeless the whole time.
I did. And when I left that day, when I told him, me and my sister came out to stay with me when I had gotten the restraining order, and I had actually gotten an ex parte restraining order, which says that it's a restraining order until he can fight against it. So that was what we were going to do on the next day. And so she stayed with me there. And when we got back to our house, so they went and took him that night, took him away, and we went back to the house, and his sister had called the house and said something about she left the gauge. There we are.
There you go.
She has the gauge for the rifle or something for him. And I'm thinking, oh Lord, you know what I'm saying? And she and he were raised in a home that had domestic abuse in it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And it was just, you know, you want to help them, but we can't change people. But I had two people that I needed to change. Four. So that's why I left.
And then, you know, the spiral effect of coming back, hoping to save him. And it sounds like you were just truly strong in your faith throughout the entire, sounds like most of your life.
Actually, I was raised Catholic. And then when I moved over to Asheville, I started going to church, and the boys were there, and they would go to church, and it was a warm, welcoming place for us. It's a little Baptist church in Penrose, North Carolina. And they welcomed us, and they all showed up at they had a prayer meeting for me there at the church that night, and then they all came up to the waiting room, and my mom and dad said that the waiting room was packed full of people, and they were praying. And when I went and gave my testimony there, the one lady, she came up and she said, you know, after I prayed that night, I knew you were going to be okay. You know, here I am. God is good. You know, right now, like sometimes I feel like I can't come up with the right word, mm-hmm. because I need sleep. Sleep is a big thing for me. After I was in the hospital for a week. I can remember my mom coming in, and she'd look at me and she'd be like, let's go down and walk up those stairs. You know, they have those few stairs to, you know, that PT goes through when you're in the hospital. So I went and mm-hmm. did that. And then she asked me who my dad was. And I said, I guess his name is Edward, but people, I guess, call him Ed. But I can't really remember all of that. My head wasn't where it is today. I remember when I signed out of the hospital and I was discharged, my maiden name is Phillips, and I signed Cattle Phillips when I signed out of the hospital. Cattle Phillips. Anyway. So when I got discharged, went home. I was there for about a month and a half. My mom and dad stayed with me for a while. My sister stayed with me. And then I went back to work part-time. My friend actually had called. She said, Carrie, we can get you disability and you'll be good. And I'm like, no, I'm not gonna. I'm gonna do something. I can go back to work. And I did go back to work part-time.
Was that at the same job that you were at before, in the same building?
It was.
How hard was that?
That was hard. I went back the night before. There wasn't anybody there. I went back that night. And I walked in there, and my boss had cleaned up the wall where he had shot me, and you could see the bullet holes like in the bathroom door and in the wall, or not in the wall, but in the divider between the two desks, and I had a whole bunch of pictures up underneath my little cubby there, and they were all my boys' pictures were moved up to where everybody could see, you know what I'm saying? It was good to come back. And they just let me come back. I just came back a few days. Now, when I worked there the first time, I'd have one of those Chinese yo-yos. I'd be like winging it out here, checking on the phone, answering the phone, checking the computer, doing 500 things at one time. And when I came back, they answered the phone and they said, that's what you need to say. And I was like, oh golly, I have to say all that when I answer the phone. It really took me a long time to get to where I was comfortable with it all, you know. And the front door was locked. There was a buzzer now underneath my desk that I could push to let the people come in. We left it locked all the time. All of our offices, we did that too.
I'm sure you can't really answer this question well, but when it happened to you, from the time that it happened to you, getting to the hospital, do you remember any of your thoughts? Were there any coherent thoughts when it happened, or it was just shut off like a light and then you woke up and you were
wrapped up in the hospital? I can remember the nurses coming in and they were going to help me. And I thought they wanted me to get up. So I started to get up and they're like, no, lay back down. And I laid back down. And then I don't really remember anything. I remember getting into the ambulance a little bit. I remember going into the CT scan, but I don't remember anything else. And I don't remember, I guess I was there. They had told my mom and dad that there was a 50-50 chance of whether I would survive or not. And then you'd have to see what she would be like after that. And, you know, when I'm at home now and I'll get discouraged with life, maybe too tired or just discouraged, easy to get discouraged here. I would look online because everything's online now, you know. So I'd look online and look up, you know, shot to the head, you know, living, whatever you're doing. And, you know, most of the stories that come up say, if you were shot to the head, you're dead. You know, there's no story. There's no...
It ends right there.
It does. But it didn't for me. And maybe it was because there was two boys in that car that said, hey, we need to pray for mom today, you know?
It's just like, it almost gives you chills hearing it, and getting to hear it come from your mouth is the crazy part. It's like, we're not hearing this from your sons or from a bystander or from a news. We're literally hearing it from, not shot in the head once, twice. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it creates a feeling that
God can do impossible things.
Impossible things. And also how lucky we all are to be here every second of every day. This episode of The Gauge is brought to you by Power Pro CBD. Guys, this is the best CBD product on the market, period. They're the only CBD company that controls its crops from start to finish. You know, as they say, from dirt to bottle. It's the most pure CBD supplement on the market. There's so many CBD products out there, and most of them are BS. I can tell you most of them are BS. This is not that. This is the only FDA-approved manufacturer of CBD out there. CBD itself, not FDA approved, but this manufacturer is approved by the FDA. Don't buy your CBD at a gas station, guys. This company third-party tests their product. It's the most pure supplement out there. CBD has so many health benefits, guys. I can tell you from personally using it. Here's what's really nice. It tastes really good. I'm like over here squirting CBD in my mouth. I look ridiculous, but it tastes great. Guys, they're offering a great promo here. 15% off and free shipping. Yes, and free shipping. Type in the promo. The Gauge at checkout to get that discount. It's powerprocbd.com. That's powerprocbd.com. Check them out. We were kind of talking about what was going on in the moment in your head, and like an idiot, I should be like, well, she just got shot in the head. Of course she's not going to be able to recollect that. But nobody else got shot but you, right?
You're right.
So, and that's another 9 shots, but that's pretty amazing in itself as well.
It is. And the guy that was behind me, you know, he was a male. And my husband or ex-husband or whatever was jealous of everybody. It doesn't matter what I'm not that person, but that's what he thought. And so I figured that that's why he was shooting at him, because he was a guy.
So what, you went through this, and then how long were you actually in the hospital? I mean, you talked about being in the hospital, but how long did they keep you?
I was in there for a week.
One week.
My brother had come home, and so we all went home together. Everybody was there with us when I went home. And I think because I got up and I walked and I would talk to people, so they thought, get her to a familiar area and then, you know, go from there. And I did go home, but, you know, things just didn't come. I used to play my guitar and sing. I did all of that. I would, and every night I would read the boys a story. And so I would sit and read the words. But when I was talking, even in the hospital, like my sister said, I was talking about a barrette. You know, half of my head is shaved and I'm talking about a barrette. not knowing what I'm talking about. Even today, I'll be sitting there talking about the July 4th, and I'll bring up Valentine's Day. It's in the same place in my brain, but it's the wrong thing. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So if I say something that you think is kind of weird, say, no, did you mean to say? Because sometimes I do that.
You've spoken pretty eloquently. I mean, I think I already said that once. I don't like to repeat words, but you know, you're doing pretty amazing in my book.
So I would read to the boys. And so I went to like an occupational therapy when I got discharged. They were going to help me with my words and stuff like that. And so I went into the thing, and they went and gave me, She Saw Spot. Spot ran. They wanted me to, like, I'm going to read this. And she said, I'm going to give you homework to do. And that's really what it was. It was stuff that your kindergartner would do. And I'm looking at her. I'm like, why is she giving me this? This is easy. You know what? What's up? You know, because I don't know what I'm speaking most of the time, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And so I'd go home and I would do it, but I'm like, I'm not going to do this. But I would read a book to my boys. So by me reading this book, it's telling my brain to connect the words to speak what I'm looking at, and it helps a lot.
So you're kind of learning while they're learning. It's kind of, you guys all learned it together.
Right, but my brain wouldn't understand what I was trying to say. And so I would look at the word and read it, and I could read no problem. So it wasn't like anything changed for the boys, because I was still doing all the stuff that I was doing before. But that was teaching my brain what it needed to know to connect back to what it needed to, when one of the bullets was in the way or something, maybe.
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. I'm no neurosurgeon, but I'm sure they would be able to tell us. After you got out of the hospital, that seems like a short period of time for a gunshot victim, especially mm-hmm. in the head, only a week. But like, wow, this is miraculous. You've recovered good enough. You can go home.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you probably started all different types of physical therapy and things like that. Probably.
That I did do. I went to a counselor for a good while after all that happened, just because it helped me to talk about it a little bit more, and my family didn't have to hear it again, because, you know, it wasn't just me that was shot. They were all shot as well. You know, it affected everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So he, and I'm jumping around so much just because I'm just,
I am too.
No, it's okay. It's good. That's what's great about this forum, is we could say whatever we want.
Okay.
But I'm just thinking about this. It's like, so he committed this act, and then he left, was able to get in his truck, take off down a highway.
Yep.
And then the police were called, and they caught him on the highway. How did they get him?
He apparently went to a hotel, and he passed out inside the hotel. And he had called his family and told them what he did. And then apparently they had called the police and told him where he was.
So his family,
or I think it was his sister-in-law at the time, called the police to tell him where he was. And he had said that when he was, and through all the trials, we had to go through two trials that were 3 weeks each long.
And you had to sit across from him, kind of thing.
Pretty much. Yep. That was very, very difficult. That was
very,
very difficult.
Tell me about all of that process.
You know, money does a lot of stuff in the court system. I had a DA that was supporting me. But he hired an attorney, and he hired psychologists and stuff like that that said that he did what he did because he was a bull rider. And if you take a look at my son today, he's a bull rider,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I have really had to take some steps to say, we're not going to be there again, you know. When Dalen finally got the PBR card, that December, I said, well, we're going to go and have an impact test on your head, and we'll know your baseline. You know, he so did not want to do that.
Surely not.
But I want to stress how important it was to wear a helmet. You know, he wanted to ride sheep years ago, and I went and got him an ugly bike riding helmet.
You showed me a picture of it. I don't blame him for being upset.
But he got used to wearing a helmet. And, you know, we had some dings. You know, he had broken his jaw with the one helmet, but then he got stepped on directly on his head, and it popped the helmet open, and he had no headache. The helmet was no longer good.
And that's
but he's good
type of helmet we have today that
right.
most everybody wears.
Yeah. and it's well worth the money. If any of your all's kids want to ride, put a helmet on their head.
Right, right. I mean, very few people ride without one now in the event of bull riding anyway, which is really important, especially with what we know about traumatic brain injury now, that when what happened to you, they knew a lot less back then than they do now.
Yep.
So my helmets have evolved.
My one son said, he said, when they were looking at to release him from prison, Colton looked at me, he goes, you know, he has the same head now as he had before, doesn't he? Meaning?
Nothing's changed.
Right.
Now, let's go back to the court hearings and all that. And kind of, I'm really curious about how that went down. You said 2-3 week trials, so 6 weeks of trials. So they had essentially gone the traditional route of the plead insanity thing. Is that what it was?
Well, he had injured his head riding bulls, and that was the first 3 weeks. And there was one juror in each time who said, well, he did injure his head. And they even had a scan of his head and his brain. And there was a nurse on the juror in the second trial. There was a nurse on the juror, and she said, that is not an injured brain. But people that don't know, they're not gonna look and say.
Well, yeah, they don't know what they're looking at. And so his lawyer, his case was, he's not right in the head. That's why he did this.
Yep.
To try to keep him out of prison.
Yep. And his brother even called me at work wanting me to say that he has mental illness.
And he called you.
Yeah.
Were you like, how dare you call me?
I'm like, yeah. I was like, what do you, you know, yeah. And that just goes to prove that they thought, and people do, they think they can do things that you and I are like, I got no words. So, I cannot even describe what you're doing.
So that brings up an interesting question, because one thing you find with most people who do terrible things, or people who do things that are not even necessarily on the up and up, you know, there's that kind of gray area that a lot of people, even in our industry, kind of just live in, right? And what you find is a lot of people allow it forever. Was that how his family was, is they would just make excuses for him and kind of condone his behavior? And
his mother worked at a domestic abuse house shelter, and she is the one who paid the attorney to say that he injured his head. That's why he did what he did. So I'm betting, you know, he should never get married again. He should never date anybody again because his head is injured to do this. I don't believe that.
So when it came to the second hearing, you're at the end of it. What was the judgment?
It was a mistrial. After the second one, it was a mistrial. What they charged him with was assault to kill with a deadly weapon.
Wow.
And because I had a restraining order, which wasn't really a restraining order, they could double the time of it. So he ended up getting 18 years or so. So he would have been released after the boys were already 18 years old. That was my goal, get the boys raised up and be good. You know what I'm saying? And
it's unbelievable that it just seems like such a light sentence for somebody who came in and tried to murder someone.
Exactly. Somebody that wanted to help them. I wasn't out to take anybody away or take him down or do anything. I was backing him. And
wow, it's really, so it was a mistrial. He went to jail for 18 years?
No, I think he went to jail for 8 years. He was released a couple of years ago, and he was released because they went and appealed the time that they gave. They doubled his time, and they fought that and said that he didn't know it was a restraining order. During the trial, though, when they said, did you know that you shouldn't be around her, he did say yes, but that it all got washed away. However, the state changed their law down in North Carolina. So an ex parte restraining order is a restraining order regardless. So they did change the law in North Carolina because of my case.
Right.
Because you know, you look at black and white, and that's what they did. They said, look, you said this and it's not that. So he gets to leave. He gets discharged. And he did. He got discharged. And they said that he couldn't, you know, they asked us to come down. We went down. We tried to fight against keeping him in there, and we lost. But I do have to stand that you know, God would not have saved me through all that he did and done all that he has done for him to come back and shoot me again. So if anything happens, people.
Well, what's great is we have a lot of listeners, and I'm sure if you needed armed guards, there'd be plenty of them. But I was not, because I made it a point from when I found out you were coming on our show, which has been a while, to not look into anything, nothing. So everything I'm hearing is fresh because I wanted to make sure that I was receiving it that way. And I was not expecting to hear what you just told me about him getting out. There's people who go to jail for longer than that for smoking pot.
You're right. There are.
Which.
You're right.
Whatever your opinion about pot is, that's fine. But those things are not the same.
No, they're not.
Wow.
I agree.
So I'm a little shocked, especially in a state like North Carolina. I wouldn't think that they would go that route. But, I mean, I guess he had a good attorney, and you probably made it a point not to keep track of his sentence, right? Or did you?
Well, I wanted to make sure that he was in there. When I found out that he was going to be released, that I mean, I was back on the phone. I'm like, I did go back to counseling even because I'm thinking this guy, he shot me. He's going to be free. What am I going to do? You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I really have had to just say, God, take care of it. He's done a great job ever since. I mean, God is awesome. And I say that often, but he is. And if you just take a look at, you know, a month or so ago, my son was, and a girl that he's seeing, were talking about Jesus. And he said, they were talking, and she said, well, do you believe in him? And he goes, well, yeah. If you know my mom's story, why wouldn't you? There's proof. They've seen it. They have seen what God can do. And after all of that happened, I'm trying to raise these kids on a job working for a staffing service. And this guy that goes to our church, an older guy, his wife is a nurse. And he said, you should go to school to be a nurse. And I looked at him, I'm like, I just signed myself out of the hospital as Kettle Phillips. You want me to go be a nurse? What's up with that, you know? And my brother, he said, yeah, you should go be a nurse. And so I worked a little bit longer down there. I moved in with my sister over in Charlotte. And then I just got to thinking, you know, we'll see what happens. And I went back, I moved back up to New York, and I enrolled in nursing school, and I am an RN. And I've had to rewrite all of the books because I have to read it, see it, write it, read it, see it. My notes were really very detailed. And I prayed all the time, very much, because I wouldn't have been able to get through it all. And I would tell the boys, okay, guys, I have a test on Tuesday, so I'm going to yell at you from now till then. That was just the way it would go, but we did get through. And they were really good. They helped me. We would go and do stuff, and Dale would be like, you can bring your books, Mom. Okay, good. You know, we stayed busy, but we kept moving forward, and it was good. They didn't want to move up there because in North Carolina, there's rodeos and whatnot. We were right around by J.B. Mooney and Boyce Knox and all them, and the boys loved it. And I said, we'll just go up there for a little bit. Let me get this, and then we'll go on. And so.
What was your reaction when Dalen told you that he wanted to ride bulls?
I said, you're going to have to wear a helmet. And he said, okay. So we went and got the helmet. And we went to one junior. It wasn't a bull. It was a sheep at the time. We went there, and he's like, yeah, I don't want to get on. I'm like, okay, good. We loaded up, and we went home. And then they wanted to again. But you have to, my kids have such passions in life, and everybody needs to. You have to have something that makes you, you know, that gets you up, that makes you eat right and work out and all that stuff. You know, Dalen, he has a strict schedule of everything that he does. And my other son, he's a calf roper, and he has a rope in his hand 24/7 all the time. We're like, hey, I need you to do something. You're going to have to put that down because he's got a rope in his hand all the time. Those passions are what God uses to give people messages throughout whatever they're doing. So, was I glad he was a bull rider? No. the first time he got on some steers down there in North Carolina, he got on one that was a, they had one that had really long horns and he had really long hair, the bull did, a little steer like. And I said to the guy, I said, hey, maybe you could give him one that might hurt him just a little, so then maybe he won't want to do this anymore. He said, I know which one to give him. And so he got him, and I'm watching. He comes out, he rides in. I'm like, what's up with that? He goes, well, he did, but, and the bull went to get after him like he did, and Dalen just got after him with his spur, and out he went. I'm like, okay, great, thanks. So now, you know, but it is what drives Dalen. Mm-hmm. It's why he gets up early. It's why he works out. It's why he minds his manners, you know? That's a good thing.
That is a good thing, and he's done really well and has a pretty exciting career ahead of him. You know, anybody who follows PBR knows who he is at this point after, you know, kind of what he's done so far, and it's just the sky's the limit for him, it seems like. And, you know, kids don't come out good without someone to teach them to be good.
And it wasn't just me. It was people at the church. It was people at my sister, my brother-in-law. It was people up home, my mom and dad, everybody. My kids were raised by everybody. But I made sure that those people that were around them were good people, you know?
Right, you learned.
Exactly, exactly. And I told them that. I said, when you hang out with people, make sure they're good people. You know, they might take you someplace you don't want to be. And then what are you going to do?
Right. And were they scared, like, for a long time growing up?
They
just,
were.
Just fearful?
Yep. Yep. They would have bad dreams through the night. And I'd finally have to go in. I'd hold them. And I'd be like, we're good. We're good. You know? It took a long time. This didn't just go away. It wasn't just like, okay, good. Now we don't have to worry about anything. Yeah, it was. And the boys have done, they are my protectors. You know, they watch over and, you know.
I get it. Now, another question I have, just because your husband is sitting on the couch over there. And I was just very interested, somebody who's been through what you've been through. Well, how long did it take you to get to the point where you're willing to even speak to another guy?
Well, the boys, we would pray every night. And so they would bring up, when they would pray for a man for me. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, no, you know what happened last time? That is not going to happen. So, you know, but they would pray for somebody that would ride a four-wheeler, ride bikes, ride horses, like to go hunting. And I'm like, hunting? Why am I hunting, you know?
So, 'cause they're boys.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So when I moved back to New York, a good friend of mine, I'd go and see her often, and she, you know, she'd be like, Carrie, you know, you can't talk about men the way that you do. I'm like, well, Mary, I have had some issues.
Really, there's some metal rattling around in my head that says I can.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So she goes, but you're raising your kids, and they will grow up and think that. And I said, oh, yeah, you're right. She was right. Yeah. She was right. You know, you want them to grow up and be good, strong Christian men. And here I am telling you that all men are not good, you know? So I started to date a little bit, not a whole lot, not, you know, here and there. And there was one person that came into my life, and it was going to take me down that same path. And it was so difficult. But I broke up with him, and I said, I can't do this anymore. And it was so, that was a step for me. I was like,
when you say same path, you mean the same toxic type of human?
Exactly. And I don't know if he would have done everything that had happened previously, but he would control me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that and be with somebody, you know? So I broke up with him, and there wasn't anything that happened, but I broke up with him. And people were like, how did you do that? I just said, this isn't going to work. We need to not be together. And it was a good thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And Sam, my husband, you know, he used to rodeo with my brother, so I've known him forever. And, you know, he would take the boys to the rodeos, and it just fit. It was good.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely good.
Was it unexpected for you to find somebody who was truly a good man that showed you that that's not how it is?
Well, you know, there are good men out there. And he has actually had to put up with me, and I still don't trust. You know, that's a sticky situation for me,
right?
You know,
How could it not be?
Right. Yeah. You know, we work through it. And it's been good. You know, it's been good.
Good. Well, I'm really happy to hear that. He's over there giggling in the background. About a phone, maybe. I thought he was laughing at you. I was like, hey, that's not nice, Sam. Just teasing. But, well, that's great. I mean, I'm really happy to hear that. And that's just more proof of God working in your life and providing you with, I mean, people need companionship.
They do. Everybody does.
So to not have that, it would be very difficult. And so I'm happy that you do have that. And how old were your sons when you did get married to Sam?
I think they were in fourth and fifth grade, or maybe fifth and sixth grade, I think.
So they were young enough for him to kind of step into that role that they needed.
Right.
Yep. And he did just that.
Yep, he did.
Wow, he so I'm did. Sure they have just an unlimited respect for Sam, huh?
Yep, they do.
Well, that's great. So you've got to be with him for a long time and just kind of have that companion that you needed, and that's wonderful. One thing I would ask you is, because when you talk about these things, right, and you had two relationships, luckily one didn't end up poorly, but the first one sure did, we all know somebody who's in that situation right now. All of us, because it's more common than maybe some people would like to think. A lot of people live in bubbles, or maybe it's not their family, but some people it is their family. What would you tell a young woman out there who is stuck in the cycle that you're stuck in? And I'm sure this is something that you've said a lot, knowing that you go out and you kind of testify and use your story and your information for the good. What would you tell a girl who's listening to this right now, who's hearing Carrie's story? What would you tell her?
I would tell her to listen to her gut. And I think that God, that's how he talks to us a lot. You get a pit in your stomach, or, you know, and it might not even be anything, but it could be. And if this is the beginning and you see something, you're like, you won't be able to change him. He has to change himself. So I would say pray and then follow what God is telling you. And you know, when I left that, the second time when I left, even the first time when I left, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I was doing my devotions a couple days ago, and it said, sometimes all you need is 20 seconds of ultimate courage. 20 seconds to say, I'm going to do this and go do it. Do you know what I'm saying? Something that makes you step into the water, and then God will take care of it. And it was difficult to leave. And then when I did, it was like, and now when I look at my life, I'm like, I can't believe I stayed as long as I did. You know, God is good and life is good, but if you're not in the right situation, life is hard and long.
And painful. Yeah. Very painful, especially for you, it was. But it's not now, which is what's great. And I just really hope that what you just, all this that you've kind of laid out there to me, I'm a complete stranger to you. You don't know me, but you were willing to come on here and say all this. Means a lot to me that you would do that. And I just really hope, because like I said, we all know that person who's in it. And it may not be to the level that yours were, or it could be worse. You never know. But you said something to just have the courage to go. And, I mean, you guys are hearing it from someone. Go.
If you're having trouble now, imagine what it would be in 2 years or next week. I mean, it doesn't get better. You know what I'm saying? You can't change people. You really can't. As much as you like to.
How often do you go out into public situations and kind of talk about this stuff? Are you asked to do it a lot?
More so now. When I was in North Carolina, I went to a lot, like in North Carolina, they have a lot of youth groups and stuff like that that meet before the first bell would ring in the school. So I would go into a lot of those and the church services down there, cowboy churches and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Up in New York, I've not done a lot of it, but the Northeast, it has there's a spiritual battle going on up there, just so you know.
Oh, I know. I think anybody who turns on any of the networks knows. In fact, you could turn one on and turn the other on, and you could see that battle playing out on two different channels.
No doubt. No doubt.
For someone like you who is so grounded in her faith and just a true testament to just the existence of the Lord and the power that holds, just in you coming on this show, right? Like you were warning me, like, oh, I don't think I could talk right. I don't know if I could say these things right. Stop me. I haven't had to. I don't know if you noticed that. I haven't had to correct you one time.
That's good.
And it's just really impressive. But I mean, when you've been through what you've been through and you're kind of witnessing the foundations of our country fall apart like they are, I mean, what goes through your mind?
A friend of mine who lost a son a couple years ago posted on Facebook, you know, you look out and you see the world the way it is today. And she said, my world had ended a couple years ago and I still got up and got going. And that's kind of where I was at that point. And I maybe, you know, and I told my husband the other day, I said, when you almost die, the way you look at life changes. You know, I enjoy the sunsets and the rainbows and the let's all sit together and have dinner and okay, we're having hot dogs again, or you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Not on anything big, but just quality time with your family. And, you know, I would pick the boys up from school because in that 15 minutes for them to go on the bus, I'd lose everything that happened to them during that day. I did the extra so that I could get the extra back from them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people meet the boys now, they'll be like, man, those are good kids. I wouldn't have thought they would have been like that. And I'm thinking,
why not?
Exactly. Why not?
Interesting.
Someone had said to me, were you surprised that Dalen made it to the NFR? And I said, no. I saw what he did to get there. You know, the passions.
You look at him, he does credit you a lot. I see that on his social media. There's lots of stuff about his mom on there, which has got to be really nice. But I pray that we can all get through this, like as a nation, stronger. It doesn't even matter what your beliefs are, because at the end of the day, we all have to get through it together.
You're right.
Even if you're standing on the other side of the line that's drawn in the sand, we literally are all in this country together. And if it goes down, we all go down. And mm-hmm. I don't think the people who are fighting against it realize that part of it.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I don't know if they even know that there could be that the end. You know, I don't know.
They may not. But what I'm kind of inspired to do is make sure that I'm being a little bit better of a man of faith, because we all drift from that. And it's interesting when you get to talk to somebody who maybe can help you get back on that. And hearing you talk about what you have, it's like, man, I think I could probably be a little better. So I'm glad you came in today.
And, you know, I was not always a strong Christian. You know, I wasn't. But just before all of this happened to me, I would go to the church because it was a place that was safe for us. Mm-hmm. And I could take the boys and we were safe there. And that's where the boys learned about God. You know, they were both baptized when they were 6 and 7 years old. And the pastor said to me, I said, I don't know. They said that they want to get baptized. They're young. I don't know. What do you think? He goes, I'll talk to them. And he did. And he's like, yeah, they know everything. They know it. They're, you know, and I'm like, okay, good. So right now I know that I will see them again. You know, mm-hmm. When Dalen rides, it makes me very, very nervous. And if anybody has a son who is a bull rider, they probably do a lot of praying.
Yeah, no kidding. That is a battle that there's lots of risk.
Yeah, yeah. People will go, how'd Dalen do? Well, he didn't do good, but he did walk out of the arena. It was a great day.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You get to go and play. And I told Dalen the other day, I said, you get to ride bulls. You would ride bulls even if you weren't in the PBR because you love to. So have fun, you know?
Right.
Have fun.
Absolutely. I did want to go way, way back. Something that has to do with you, not even your story. I was told that you did trick riding.
I did.
Yeah. What the? How did you get into that? Because I don't know anybody who does it. So, well, or did it personally.
I would rather be a barrel racer because I love barrel racing. So I actually, you know, you have all these barrel racers that come on here. I'm like, wow, I wanted to be on the World Champion Barrel Racer podcast. But anyway.
Hey, too many people are saying that we're a barrel racing show. We're not. We're everything. See, we're everything. You're on this show. It's not just barrels.
My sister was a trick rider. My dad, he had a bucking horse. His name was Tom. And we would go to an old ranch type place every Friday night and have buckouts. And my dad would buck that horse out in the bareback riding. And then my sister would put a trick riding saddle on and trick ride around the arena. And so she went out to like Riata Ranch in California. She is an amazing truck rider. And so I wanted to get out of a situation I was in at home with another. I'm not very good at picking out guys, just so you know. Well, now I am, but then I wasn't.
He's over there smacking himself in the head. Pour yourself another drink, Sam. You deserve it.
So anyway. So I was with this guy, and I was wanting to get away from him, and she got me a truck riding job. And I didn't even know how to truck ride. I really did not. I had done it a couple times on her horse just playing around. And so we went and got on it, and I was practicing, and I couldn't even hold a trick. And I'm like, what is up with this, you know? And she goes, oh, in a month we had to leave to go truck ride, mm-hmm. or in a week. So she goes, let me get on, and I'll try it. I'm like, oh, okay. So she got on there, and she couldn't hold the trick either. So I'm like, okay, good. It's not just me, right. So we got another horse, and I trick rode with Longhorn in the IPRA for 2 years. It was a lot of fun.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we stayed on the road.
That's something you see at a lot of rodeos. But for me personally, I just have never been like, oh, trick riders. You know, yeah. But it's really interesting to hear. It looks difficult.
You know, if you can hold your own weight, I think you're, you know, I was young and I could do it. Right. Then.
Makes sense.
It was good.
Sounds good.
You know, when I was in school, when I first started back, I had to take a whole bunch of extra courses. And so I was on the Honor Society, and I went on a trip with them. And the one kid said, I was telling him the story, and he goes, you know, I just don't really believe you. When you look at me, you wouldn't believe.
That you could get through that?
That I was shot in the head, that I've got bullets there now. And so, you know, and I think that would be the case for a lot of them. You know what I'm saying? And there was another guy that I was like, come to the church service, a friend of ours, a while back.
Right.
And he goes, but how do I know that those stories are true? And I said, do you believe me that my story is true? So a lot of people don't really believe.
Is that something that's happened to you? Like people have questioned your story?
Well, when you look at me, would you see that I was shot in the head?
No. And when you speak, that's, you know, you speak, and I'm sure that your husband would say, or your kids, anybody who knows you'd be like, wow, I would have to say that you, not knowing you, 100% recovery, if there's such a thing. I mean, you just speak so well and tell great stories, and I'm sure people see your bad days, but I mean, it's just amazing to talk to you and know that happened, because that's just what you would expect out of that is not what I see here. So it's really amazing.
Like, whenever you walked into the studio today, I had no idea that any of this happened.
Yeah, Ty didn't know. No one told him. And yeah, you do. You do. You could speak anywhere with anybody. It's very impressive.
Well, that's good, because normally I told the boys to put the clothes in the dryer. I meant the washer, and they put them in the washer. But it was a long story. But they're like, "You, mom, you told me to." I'm like, "Well, you know, don't always do what I say."
Right. I mean, like I said, it's a mind blowing thing that you're one here and two. I really feel like somebody like you can help a lot of people. And I know you've done a lot, and I'm really thankful that you came on this show. And if it helps one person that you won't see, or I won't see, or Ty or Sam over there, we'll never see him. But if you help one person get out of that situation that they're in, it's worth every second. So I'm really grateful you came on the show.
Thank you. And Dalen, you know, he if you noticed, when he went to the NFR and when he first started in the PBR, he had chaps that had a cross with a purple ribbon behind it. That's for domestic abuse. Mm-hmm. So,
he probably wants to speak out against it. Is that something that you do, where you go and you speak out against domestic abuse, or have you been asked to do that?
I haven't. I've just gone and told my story to, if anybody wants to hear it, I tell them. You know.
Yeah, I'm surprised somebody hasn't approached you to make it a Lifetime movie.
I know, that's what right. Somebody said. I said, yeah, and I'm a Lifetime. I could make a Lifetime movie, which, you know, Lifetime movies are not like happy and expiring.
Yeah.
I want to make a, you know, happy and inspiring one.
Yeah. Well, you're very, very happy, which is amazing. And it's great. But I think probably after people hear this, you're probably going to get a lot of calls about it. Hey, Carrie, can we have a... I mean, who used to play the Lifetime movie? So, like, Julia Roberts?
Yeah!
You think Julia Roberts could play you? I don't know if you're big on social media or not, but if you are, where can people see you on there?
On Facebook, I'm at Carrie Swearingen, and I have Instagram, Carrie and Sam Swearingen.
Ah. Are you posting, like, daily devotionals and things on there? Because if not, you should.
You don't blow up. Well, I do sometimes, but I'm working now.
Right.
It's like a bad thing, but I work a lot of hours, and so I don't get a chance to do that. But usually if I post something about the boys, I put a Bible verse on there. Mm-hmm. And so.
I bet a lot of people would want to just hear your thoughts of the day. You should do that.
My thought of the day.
Yeah, your thought, Carrie's thought of the day, and I'll make sure that I share it because you have a lot of wisdom, and I think a lot of people should listen.
Oh,
you have a lot of wisdom, and I think you should share it. Besides, you can't use the work excuse. It takes like 2 seconds to do that. You could do it in the car before you start the engine.
I don't have a tie.
You don't have a tie, but your phone is your tie. There's a red button. Just push that. In fact, Ty will be happy to show you how to do it.
I'll help out with that.
But he charges by the episode, so it doesn't matter if it's 10 seconds.
If it's an episode, I'm charging now.
Yeah. I see. Anyway. Well, great. I'll let you guys get to it, and very exciting stuff. I can't wait to release it, and I hope you listen to it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Wrong. The devil
said I couldn't hang around. This has been The Gauge, hosted by me, Chance Conrado, produced and edited by our guy, Ty Yeager. Shout out to the executive producers, Dustin Pointer and Cody Denton. Marketing and content produced by Casey Burke. Our theme song is by Shay Ashire and the Night Howlers. Make sure to rate and review this podcast, as well as follow The Gauge on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to The Gauge wherever you get your podcast. And guys, don't forget to check out Power Pro CBD. Use the promo code THEGAGE at checkout to get that 15% in free shipping. We'll see you guys next time.